Chapter 20. Truths. Sunset approached, silhouetting central against a canvas of amber hues. Dying rays of light swathed the bed, caressing skin and steel as they receded over tousled sheets. Nothing disturbed the lazy sanctuary. Even the sounds of the city were muted, distant things. Roy stirred, his arm curling around the lithe body next to him as he emerged slowly from a deep, sated sleep. No shrill ring of the alarm screamed at him that the day had begun, and no nagging worry disturbed his peace. There were only the natural noises of his home and, next to him, the strong warmth of another body. Looking down through half-closed eyes, he examined Ed's face, for once unmarked by stress or worry. His lashes were dark fans against his cheekbones, and his lips, still reddened by kiss after kiss, were parted slightly as he slept. The braid had come completely loose, and, as carefully as possible, Roy swept back the fall of gold, letting the soft tresses trail down Ed's back instead. Gently, he brushed his hand down over the muscled hardness of Ed's arm, tracing the white line of a scar as he marveled at the young man in his bed. Broad shoulders and chest tapered down into a slim waist where, despite all the food Ed ate, there was nothing but muscle and taut, warm skin that fluttered at Roy's touch. Making sure to move quietly, he propped himself on his elbow and lifted the sheet, unable to hide the smirk that crossed his lips as he admired the rest of his lover's body. He had traced every part of it with his hands, he was sure, but sometimes touch was not quite the same as taking in the whole picture. The expression on Roy's face fell as he noticed that, even asleep, Ed held his automail tightly against his chest, as though he wanted to reject it from the intimate equation. Steel fingers were curled in a loose fist, and Mustang gently wrapped his own finger under one of the digits. Ed obviously thought that the automail arm was not a part of him, useful, but still alien. Yet, to Roy, it was Ed's palm pressed against his, and Ed's fingers that were linked between his own. Flesh or steel, it made no difference. Both were beautiful and strong, no matter what other people thought. Miss Rockabell, for one, would probably place the grace of the automail above the primitive attraction of Ed's flesh arm. Strangers, on the other hand, would think that he was somehow lacking or crippled. They never saw that they were the ones who were less. Yes, they may have all their limbs, but they could never be as perfectly human as Ed, or so utterly irresistible. Roy sighed, feeling the cool slide of metal beneath his stroking thumb as he waited for nagging guilt to rear its ugly head. Minutes passed, but his warm contentment remained untainted by anything but the steady heat of attraction. There were good reasons that he and Ed should not have taken this last step, should not have gotten this close. But here, now, it was impossible to feel any remorse or uncertainty. This felt too right, too natural to be anything wrong. Next to him, Ed stirred, muttering something unintelligible as he pressed himself closer, his flesh hand rubbing up and down Roy's back in slow, steady motions. It was comforting, a gesture aimed to reassure rather than arouse, but nerves still thrilled at his touch, humming like violin strings beneath a master's bow. Roy brushed a kiss to Ed's temple, then his cheek before capturing his lips, angling his head to get better access. A contented noise rumbled in his chest as the hand on his back moved to clench around the curve of his hip, holding him firmly in place. Ed tipped his chin up, his tongue skating along Roy's bottom lip as sleepy lethargy became something hotter and more urgent. God, he had forgotten this. The intoxicating addiction of a new lover. Roy's body was hungry for every moment, craving Ed's closeness and touch. His hips moved eagerly as Ed's erection pressed into his thigh, hard and demanding against sensitive skin. Words were meaningless, unnecessary things, clumsy and inadequate in a world of sensation. To say anything would break the spell and plunge them both back into the coarse, chafing reality where this intimacy was something they should not have. Ed's fingers curled gently at the nape of his neck, a tender touch at odds with the hungry movements of his body. He was shaking with want, quivering as he pressed himself against Roy, saying plenty without uttering a thing. The world could wait. This one? Ed was propped up on his elbow, his automail hand supporting his head as his flesh finger traced a faint trio of scars, no more than silvery lines against pale skin. Roy chuckled, twisting away from the ticklish sensation and catching Ed's hand in his. Some people may have found the soft exploration of every flaw disturbing, but Roy could see it for what it was. Every marred point of flesh was a focal point for another part of his life, another piece of the puzzle and another story to be told. Ed carried enough scars of his own to know that. Besides, every revelation brought a fresh emotion to Ed's features, from laughter when he confessed that one scar was from walking into a lamppost when he was drunk, to fierce protectiveness at the mention of Ishbal and far too many close calls to count. Ed may have learned a modicum of tact with what he said, but he had never been able to hide his true emotions from his face. The openness was refreshing, so far removed from the usual games of guile and deceit lovers played. Ed had decided to trust him, and now the decision was made. It was complete, unreserved faith. Loving or hating, laughing or crying, Edward never did things by halves. How had it taken him all these years to realize that? "I fell out of a tree when I was 8," Roy said, grinning at Ed's snort of laughter. "I've never liked heights since." Ed glanced up, one eyebrow raised in faint surprise. "You climbed up on that roof in the warehouse district when I wanted to look at the array. I sort of noticed you kept back from the edge, but I thought you were just being weird." "It's not like I'm completely incapacitated by it. I'd just rather keep both feet on the ground." He ran a hand up Ed's arm and across his shoulder, watching those gold eyes narrow in contentment. The thin silver chain of Tom's pendant hung around Ed's neck, and the star rested just above the array on his chest, a pentagram of lines in a circle of crystals. Roy drew his fingers down the chain, feeling the rough edge of the links before he took the pendant in his hand, pivoting the shape idly in its circumference of shining stone. One question, unimportant but nagging nonetheless, kept coming to the forefront of his mind, rising amidst the sea of confusion like flotsam after a storm. "When we got to Ryder's, Min asked if you had come to take Sally up on her offer," he began, still staring at the necklace in his grasp. "What exactly did Sal offer you?" Ed shifted in an unconscious shimmy of embarrassment, and Roy looked up to see that a dark flush had blossomed across his cheeks. "Does it matter?" he asked. "It was ages ago, anyway." "You don't have to tell me if you don't want to. I'm just curious." It was not important, but the need to know was like a thorn, a prickling irritation that would not go away. There were bigger, more dangerous unknowns in Edward's life, from the thing inside him to the depths of his past. But the idea of knowing something like this, something small and trivial, made the goal of understanding Ed seem more achievable. Maybe his expression wasn't as guarded as he thought, because Ed gave a resigned sigh and muttered, "She offered me a job at Ryder's." Roy blinked, stunned for a moment as Ed's words sank in. He had known Sally's offer would have something to do with her business, but he thought it would be a discount or something. Not a place in the select brothel. Surprise had him speechless, but it was obvious why the offer had been made. Sally was no fool. She might not have lust in her eyes when she looked at Ed, but when her business was selling sex, she would be able to see clearly what attracted her patrons. Beauty wasn't the key. Roy knew from first-hand experience how good looks paled in no short order if there was nothing but shallow vanity beneath a pretty exterior. Not only was Ed eye-catching, but there was also a uniqueness about him that gave him an extra element of appeal. He would be something different for a lover of either gender. None of Sal's employees struck him as one-time whores. They had regulars and formed relationships of a sort with their clients. Sally knew a good business opportunity when she saw it, and the truth was that she and Ed would probably have made a fortune if he had agreed. The idea of Ed working for Sally should not unsettle him. He had enough lovers littering his past to know that he certainly had no kind of moral high ground, but that did not stop the surge of protectiveness rearing its head. The silence in the room had thickened, going from something easy and comfortable to something dense with unsaid words and unvoiced fears, as though Ed was expecting, what, him to be shocked, angry, disgusted? He was no idiot. There was nothing virginal or shy about the way Edward made love, and he knew there had been at least one other person who had shared Ed's bed. Perhaps they had judged him for it, taking the sins of the profession and tarring Ed with the same painful brush. Yet, it was not as if Ed had taken Sally up on her offer, and even if he had made that decision, then there were worse things than prostitution. "Did you ever think about it?" he asked quietly, watching Ed's expression intently for any clues as to what was going through his head. Gold eyes flickered up to his, confused and nervous, before returning back to the bed as though the soft surface were fascinating. Ed shrugged, a jerky, defensive motion. "It crossed my mind a couple of times." He laughed, but it was an edgy sound without any real mirth. "I think Granny Pinaco would approve of that more than she does of me being a state alchemist. At least they don't kill people." "I'm glad you didn't go and work for her." He tugged gently on the necklace, relieved when Ed moved closer rather than maintaining his defensive stance. "If you had, what we did earlier would have cost me a fortune. Worth every cent, of course," he added, noticing the faint twitch of a smile on Ed's lips before he brushed a kiss across them. "It doesn't bother you?" There was more in that question than just words, and Roy would have had to be blind not to be able to read what was behind Ed's uncertainty. His guess was right. Some past lover had turned their back, casting judgment without any thought of what they were letting go. Still, their loss was his gain, and for that he was immensely grateful. His curiosity niggled at him, demanding who, when, where. But for once he ignored it. Whoever Ed had shared his bed with was irrelevant, and knowing the details would do neither of them any good. Besides, if he asked, then Ed would have every right to expect Roy to reveal the truth about his encounters. That was a can of worms best left unopened. Realizing that Ed was still waiting for an answer, he shook his head firmly, pulling him down until he was stretched out along the mattress, loose-limbed and relaxed against Roy's side. "People sell worse parts of themselves than their bodies every day. Their honor, their self-respect. No, Ed, it doesn't bother me, and I don't think less of you for considering it." Ed looked up at him, lips parted a fraction. Eventually he sighed, letting his head fall back to the pillow as he rubbed his nose along Roy's jaw in silent gratitude. Admitting that he needed anything had never been Ed's style, and acknowledging that he was reassured by Roy's words would be, to him, a sign of his own weakness, rather than something that made him a little bit more human. A loud tapping, rhythmic and enthusiastic, broke the fragile peace. The sound was a jarring, alien thing, and Roy stared towards the door in confusion as he tried to place it. A few thundering heartbeats later, he realized that the noise was not coming from the threshold to his room, but from just along the corridor, and he winced as Al's voice reached his ears. "Brother, wake up! I've found it!" The floorboards in the hallway creaked softly as Al shifted from foot to foot. Eventually, he seemed to give up waiting for a reply and opened the door to the room Ed usually slept in. Because the tone of his voice moved from excited to instantly concerned. "Brother?" Ed swore softly, but it lacked vehemence. It seemed more of an obligatory curse at the inconvenience of younger siblings everywhere than an exclamation of concern. His eyes held a fragment of apology, and he shrugged, shaking his head. "We couldn't have kept this from Al anyway. He's not stupid," he pointed out. "He'll guess where I am." Roy nodded, grateful that Al was no longer a 7-foot suit of armor. Not that the young man would ever lash out at another human being without reason, but if he thought Ed was being hurt, either physically or emotionally, there would be nothing but cold, punishing anger. Roy had seen it once, and it had honestly terrified him more than Ed's volatility ever could. One dead, hating look from the younger Elric was worse than any punch the older could throw. A timid knock at the door made him smile despite himself, and he heard Al nervously clear his throat. "Brigadier General, is Ed in there? It's just that he's not in his room or anywhere else in the house, and if he's not with you, then I need to go and look for him." The embarrassment in the young man's voice was palpable, and it was Ed who took pity on him first. "Yeah, I'm here. I'll be out in a minute, okay?" There was a moment of silence from the other side of the door before Al spoke again, the smile audible in his voice. "All right, I'll be downstairs. I need to show you something, but it can wait." Roy raised his eyebrows, surprised by the smug happiness he could hear in those words. He was not sure what he had been expecting. Shock, perhaps, or an element of uncertainty. But instead, Al sounded as though it was what he hoped for all along. Perhaps it was. Ed's happiness was all that mattered to Alphonse, and Roy suspected that he was one of the few souls who could accept almost anything without a trace of judgment. "I should go and see what he's found out," Ed murmured, making no move to leave as he wrapped his arm back around Roy's waist. Roy nodded, knowing that they could not stay here forever, no matter how much they wanted to. Before, there had been no need for words, but now there were too many. They choked in his throat, uncomfortable lumps to be swallowed back. He wanted to ask if they would still have this, out there, where the world was not a warm bed, but a cold, hard place waiting to tear them apart. Was this thing, so new and different from anything he had experienced, strong enough to stand against all the odds that were stacked against them? A sigh whispered between them, feather soft in the peace, and Roy dipped his head to brush a kiss over Ed's forehead. "While you're staying in this house, will you sleep here with me?" He waited uncomfortably, wanting to have that one little thing to hold on to, needing to know that this was something more than an oasis of bliss in the desert of his need. Relief curled through him as Ed nodded, lazy golden eyes meeting his. "Course, I can't fuck you in my room. It's too close to Al." Roy chuckled, shaking his head in disbelief as Ed kissed him one last time and sat up, swinging his legs over the edge of the bed before stretching like a cat. Muscles coiled and bunched under his skin, and Roy curled his hands in the sheets to stop himself from reaching out and tumbling him back onto the mattress. On anyone else, the same slow arch of the spine would have seemed posed, a non-vocal demand for attention and admiration. With Ed, though, it was something natural, full of powerful, unconscious grace. Sitting up, Roy crawled closer, kneeling behind Ed, running his hands up his sides, kissing the curve of his shoulder and reveling in the scent of sweat and sex. "We need a shower," he mumbled, his voice rough as Ed tipped his head back, exposing his neck to Roy's teeth and lips. "Together, or..." God, how did he do it? How could one person turn him on so much without even trying? The image of Ed, water descending over his body as he leaned back against the cool tiles, was vivid in Roy's mind, and he swallowed hard as his mouth went dry. "I'll still waiting," he pointed out, "and if I get in the shower with you, then I won't be in any hurry to get out again." Ed made a husky sound in his throat, bottom teeth worrying his lip as he tried to make up his mind between what he should do and what he wanted. Eventually, he huffed out a breath, shoulders slumping in defeat as he glanced up at Roy. "Next time?" A nod. It was all he could manage. If he had to speak, he knew that he would end up begging. Sex was supposed to ease this ache, this want, not make it stronger. Roy could hardly say he had been left wanting, but having had a taste, it was as if nothing else would ever suffice. The bathroom door closed behind his lover's back, and a moment later the gush of water reached his ears. There was no sound of the lock tumbling into place, and he closed his eyes as he realized that Ed had left it open in wordless invitation. He could walk in there and... Quickly he got out of bed, dragging himself from the clinging tangle of sheets and reaching for a robe. He couldn't stay here, not when all he wanted to do was step under the spray and run his hands across hot, slick skin. None of his intentions had anything to do with cleanliness, and he would not be rushed in showing just how much he appreciated Ed's body being his to touch and hold and have. Firmly, telling himself that it was for the best, he walked to the bedroom door, slipping out into the hallway and making his way towards the other bathroom. His shower was perfunctory and bone-jarringly cold, a necessary discomfort if he was going to get through the rest of the day without embarrassing himself. By the time he had shaved, toweled his hair dry, and returned to the bedroom, Ed was gone. It took Roy a few seconds to reassure himself that the encounter had not just been some kind of dream, a fantasy conjured up by his lust-addled brain in its exhaustion. No, it had been real enough. Imaginings could never be that intense or satisfying. Besides, the sheets were still rumpled in testament, and the pillows on both sides of the bed were dented. The air was thick with mist from Ed's shower and carried that faint, seductive tang of sex. Walking over to the window, he opened the casement, letting cool air sweep in, carrying with it the perfume of autumn, a cocktail of half-forgotten summer warmth and the sharp, biting promise of winter. Sunset was a distant memory now. Vivid hues had succumbed to true night, and the first stars were blinking through the darkness as he dressed in clean clothes, doing up the buttons of his shirt and staring out across the city. A movement by the gate caught his eye, and his hands stilled as he peered into the darkness. Street lamps had guttered into life, and now they cast pools of light along the pavement. The thing on the gatepost turned, yellow eyes flashing, tail twitching as it settled on its perch. Just a cat. Roy sighed, hoping the wretched creature had not been crapping in his flower beds. He shook his head, turning away and reaching for a comb. It was strange how the mind could play tricks. He had seen the creature's silhouette in his peripheral vision, and, for a second, it had looked more human than feline. Shaking off the ridiculous notion, Roy turned away, doing up the last of his shirt buttons and leaving his collar open as he switched off the bedroom light and made his way downstairs. Peering into the kitchen, he smiled at the sight that awaited him. Ed and Al were poring over a book, blonde heads bent together as they stared intently at one page. Ed was statue still, his palms braced on the table as he examined what Al had found. The younger Elric was edgy. His earlier enthusiasm had faded, and his fingers twitched restlessly, measuring out the rapid pace of his thoughts. They were completely oblivious to his presence, and Roy leaned against the doorframe, sinking into his thoughts. Sleep had restored his energy and left him anxious for a course of action. There were so many problems to solve, and he had no idea whether Hawkeye had been successful in pinpointing Carmine's location. He hoped, rather than believed, she had managed to find something probative. Perhaps he should go back to the office. Within the four walls of his house he may feel safe, but he also felt detached. The urgency of Carmine's threats fell away, becoming irrelevant as he wrapped himself in the sanctuary of his own domain. For a few hours that was what he needed, but now he itched to strike back, to lash out and put this whole situation to rest once and for all. As if it would be that easy. It was almost impossible to recall that this had begun as a simple grave robbing. Someone had violated his best friend's tomb, and he had given it over to Ed to deal with. From that second onwards, the entire thing had escalated out of control. It was no longer about one person or one crime. Somehow, it had turned into a struggle between something far bigger than humanity. And at the heart of it all, like a cancer that poisoned everything it touched, was the Gate of Truth. A decade ago, he had thought it was just a myth, a symbol for the power at the core of alchemy and the principles of equivalent exchange. Then the Elrics had blundered into his life. They had been too caught up in their desperate whirlwind of a quest to stop and explain. Yet there had always been something in Ed's eyes, a hatred that kissed the edges of fear. All he had to do was look at that boy, already so far from being a child, and Roy remembered that all myths had a basis in fact, and all symbols were derived for a reason. His entire knowledge of the gate was compiled from rumor and castaway comments. At first, he had only the faintest concept that it was something ruthless, a thing without empathy, designed purely to keep alchemy in check. In the dark recesses of his heart, he thought that this arrogant brat of a boy deserved what it had cost him. The price had been asked and taken. Why not accept his punishment and carry on? It ashamed him that he had ever thought something so callous. As the years passed, it became more obvious that the gate had taken too much and given them nothing but empty promises. Every day, in some way or another, it reached out to touch them again. Malicious and vile, like a child pulling wings off of butterflies. Its presence tainted every aspect of their lives and never left them in blissful ignorance. At least Al had, in the most part, been cleansed of it. In that, at least, Ed had succeeded, just as he had always planned. It did not matter how much his brother protested to the contrary, he still maintained that the idea to bring back their mother had been his, and therefore his sin alone to bear. And, to Roy, the gate was no longer just a myth or a symbol. It was no longer something ruthless but fair. He could see, with the eyes of an outsider, that it was fascinated with the child who had stumbled upon it. Ed's power intrigued it, and time and again it pushed itself upon him. Back when Ed had first become obviously ill, Al had argued that the gate was nothing more than a portal, a thing without conscious thought, need, or desires. But for something to be fascinated, there had to be a mind and awareness. Ed said Carmine had been polluting the gate for centuries with the pain and sins of humanity, and from that had stemmed two halves of the original, each with some goal in mind and neither afraid to use their hosts in order to achieve them. Then there was what happened in the kitchen earlier. The scent of sand and flowers, and that cynical touch in his mind, rifling through precious memories as if they were nothing more important than tax returns. A shiver crawled up his spine, and he twitched restlessly. Did Ed feel like that all the time? Like a book to be read? Was it always there, watching him? Had it been there while they were together, a voyeur to their pleasure? He grimaced in distaste at the thought of their intimacy being observed by something else. Ed had said it was trying to understand the feelings between them, to make sense of them. But how could something be so childishly innocent and so cruel in the same moment? It was almost as if whatever was hiding inside Ed possessed two distinct sides. One seemed human, curious and intelligent. The other was far more machine-like, cold and indifferent. "It's the same, isn't it?" Al asked, his voice interrupting Roy's train of thought as he addressed his brother. "Those are the same kind of symbols I've seen in the arrays you use." Ed's only reply was a nod of agreement as he bit his lip, frowning in concentration at the open pages. "That's what you've been looking for?" Roy asked, returning Al's warm smile of greeting. "I thought if I could find out where I'd seen them before, it would give us some idea of why Brother's alchemy has changed so much." Al shrugged. "I'm not sure if it's any use, though."
"Why not?"
Padding across the tiled floor, Roy glanced over Ed's shoulder. The array in the book was a series of concentric circles, very similar to what he had seen Ed use before. Around the circumference were a series of marks, like hieroglyphs. Each was carefully placed and obviously relevant to the intended purpose of the design. In the past, Roy had been able to see parallels between Ed's altered alchemy and the simpler, single-circle layouts of modern arrays, but this looked completely alien. "The book's about the origin of alchemy," Al explained. "There are a lot of references to older civilizations like Xerxes, but this is before that. Look." He pulled the book out from under his brother's nose, ignoring the soft complaint Ed made as he flicked through the pages before turning the tome around for Roy to see. "This is the kind of thing they found among the ruins of a place believed to be the main city of Xerxes." Bold lines drew single circles, rather than chains or overlapping disks. Some of them contained one ring inside another, but they looked far more like modern alchemy than what Ed used. The one thing that caught his eye was the same symbol drawn over the lines, half obscured. "The designs have changed, but the sigils are still there." "They're elemental symbols," Ed said quietly, taking the book back and closing the covers. "We don't need to use them anymore because they've been incorporated into the arrays. When alchemy was first used, every element of the transmutation had to be laid out. They didn't know how to combine them together." He looked at the innocuous book as if it might jump up and bite him. "That older array was one of the initial designs to build the gate." The kitchen was quiet, and Roy realized he was holding his breath, waiting for him to continue. Gradually, as the days and weeks passed, Ed had given them pieces of the puzzle and fragments of answers that only led to more questions. He was the only one with any idea of what the gate wanted or why any of this was happening in the first place. If anyone was going to be the key to finding a solution, it was Ed. "Would it work?" Al asked, his voice careful. He had years of practice at getting his brother to talk about things Ed would rather keep quiet. But that did not mean he was always successful. "Could you use the one in the book to rebuild the gate?" "Even if I could, I wouldn't." Ed's eyes were flat, and his jaw clenched in a stubborn line for a moment before he sighed. "The array in that book would never even activate," he muttered, closing his eyes as if the thought made him feel sick. "Not without ripping the world apart in the process. It would take every kind of energy imaginable to get it going. Even if an alchemist got it to work, there would be nothing left afterwards." Roy tipped his head to one side, paying careful attention to the tone of Ed's voice. He was not speaking as if he was working through a theory. He was stating fact. "You know that because the gate told you?" Ed nodded once, not offering any more agreement than that simple gesture. "It's got the knowledge of everyone who has ever passed through it." He looked at Roy, his sharp, defensive gaze softening a touch. "At first, there was nothing between me and all that. Now there's some kind of barrier. Only some ideas get through. It shows me what it thinks I need to know. Nothing more." It was said so calmly, as if having the knowledge of the universe so close at hand was as normal as breathing. But Roy could see the lines of strain around Ed's eyes at the admission. Everything they were being told was in the strictest confidence. He knew that. It was not a case of Ed being difficult or stubborn, but the more he said, the more Roy realized how much danger the young alchemist was in. If the military found out about this, then Carmine would not be the only one hunting Ed down. Perhaps the army's researchers would not kill him, but they would not let anything as simple as a conscience stand in the way of extracting all the information possible from Ed's mind, regardless of the consequences to the gate's human host. Roy's lips flattened into a grim, determined line as he silently promised that he would do everything in his power to protect Ed from that. There were some things better left unknown, and the thought of even a fraction of the gate's knowledge in Hakuro's hands was enough to chill him to the bone. The sooner they eliminated Carmine and restored Amstrus to normal, the better. Not just for the sake of the city, but for Ed. earlier, you said it wanted you to put the gate back together. Did it tell you why? Roy could feel Al shifting next to him, desperate for an answer, but he did not glance over. Instead, he concentrated on Ed, watching as the young man rubbed his forehead, tracing his fingertips over the array that rested between his eyes. Sort of. Ed shifted helplessly, the frown on his brow a mixture of anger and uncertainty. I need to start at the beginning. It barely makes sense as it is. He sat down at the kitchen table, staring fixedly at the wood as he crossed his arms and began to explain. The gate was built in a place called Babylon. It was a city that existed about 1,000 years before Xerxes. When alchemy was first discovered, there was no gate. Energy was taken from Amstrad to power the transmutations. It worked for a while, a few decades at most, before things started to go wrong. Storms, earthquakes. He shrugged, drumming his automail fingers on the tabletop. So the gate was built as a way to balance the use of energy, to make sure that, for all the power used, something equivalent was given back. Babylon was saved? Al asked, his voice muted as if he already knew the answer. Ed shook his head. It took every life in the city to construct the gate, even the alchemist who came up with the idea. At first, there was just one sacrifice. The king, or prince, or something. Kaleo. His blood activated the array, and somehow he became part of the gate. Roy grimaced. He knew if you went back far enough, alchemy became something ancient, dark and foul in its obscurity. Blood always seemed to have some kind of role, intrinsically linking with the array. Some people still believe that it was the best medium in which to draw an array, and the only thing that had kept Al's soul bonded to the armor for all those years was a seal sketched frantically in Ed's blood. Human life was a powerful resource. Both Ed and Carmine had demonstrated that in very different ways. Kaleo was just a kid, and he's been stuck there ever since. Ed shifted uncomfortably. His eyes narrowed as though the effort to explain was painful. Normally, it's him who's talking to me, or trying to explain things. But sometimes there's something else. I don't even know what it is. It doesn't seem human. But that's the part that wants me to rebuild the gate. It was tempting to reach out, to stroke his hands across Ed's shoulders and offer the reassurance that he obviously needed. But Roy clenched his fists in his pockets, contenting himself with moving closer, so that he was at least within arm's reach. If he touched Ed now, he was afraid that the flow of words would stop, and that they would never get the answers they needed. Even if it was physically painful to maintain that distance, he knew it had to be done. Besides, if he got into the habit of touching Ed whenever he felt like it, then it would be all too easy for him to slip up in the public eye. Did it say why? Al's question hung in the air like an axe waiting to fall. Outside, branches tapped on the window, beckoning fingers eager for the truth. But the noise had little impact on the tight, tense silence in the kitchen. I don't know. I think it tried, but I didn't really understand. Getting to his feet, Ed paced back and forth in a tight line, face pinched with concentration. It was something to do with balance. The reason it drained you all of your energy is because it wanted to make sure that Carmine was not more powerful than me. His voice slowed, taking on the steady, almost reverent tones of dawning realization. Killing her won't work. Even if I can pull the darkness out of her, there's nowhere for it to go. It would still have the strength to find another host and carry on. The only thing that can contain what's inside of her, what she created, is the gate. It was fascinating to see Ed like this, to be there as the glittering shards of a broken image finally fell into place to create one smooth picture, even if it was like something out of a nightmare. I don't have a fucking choice, do I? Ed whispered brokenly, the healthy glow of his skin fading as the blood drained from his face. If I don't rebuild the gate, there'll be no way to stop her. She'll just carry on killing people until there's no one left. Roy would have given anything to be able to deny it, to say that Ed always had a choice. but it would be nothing except a shallow lie. It was a cruel twist of irony that Ed would be forced to put back together the one thing that had destroyed so much of his life. The gate had tainted his past and stolen his future, and now it was making him help recreate the one thing he would rather see gone for good. "I'll help you." Al lifted his chin stubbornly as Ed looked up, lips already parted to argue. "You don't have to do it on your own. Why should you? It's the world that's in danger, so why should you be the only one to fix it?" "No, Al, I only just got you back. How do you know it won't take you away from me again?" Ed's body language changed like the flick of a coin, switching from defensive to aggressive. His whole stance was determined, eyes flashing and shoulders squared to argue down his younger brother. "So I should just sit back and watch it tear you apart?" Al demanded. "You don't know that's what will happen." "And you don't know the gate will try and take me again. I don't need your permission, Ed. I'll help whether you want it or not." Al's eyes flickered over to Roy for a moment before sliding away. "And I doubt you'll be able to stop anyone else from doing what they want, either." The shrill ring of the telephone cut through the house, cutting off whatever Ed's response would have been. The two Elrics glared at each other across the kitchen, neither one of them backing down, each waiting for the other to surrender. Roy left them to it, knowing better than to get caught in the middle of an argument. Excusing himself, he strode quickly into the hall before grabbing the receiver and lifting it to his ear. "Sir, there's a car on its way back to you," Hawkeye said, not bothering to greet him. Her voice, normally so calm and collected, was riddled with a faint tremor. In the background, he could hear a woman sobbing hysterically, and the chattering confusion of people who were too sickened by what they saw to know where to begin.
"What is it? Did you find where Carmine's hiding?"
"We found something, but I don't think she did this." Risa cleared her throat, and when she spoke again, her words were carefully modulated to hide all trace of emotion. "I don't think she's our only problem." Roy closed his eyes in mute despair, feeling more weight settle on his shoulders. Was it too much to ask that they only had to deal with one calamity at a time? How was it possible to go through months, sometimes years, with nothing but peaceful, monotonous bureaucracy, only to face one disaster on top of another in the space of a few weeks?
"Does it look like something to do with an alchemist?"
"There are arrays present." Whatever the first lieutenant had found had shaken her. He could hear the uneven drag of her breath, as if she was struggling to master her emotions. "I'm sorry, sir, but I don't think what we're dealing with is an out-of-control alchemist. Nothing human could be this cruel."
"Cruel?"
he repeated in a hollow voice, looking up to see Ed and Al watching him from the kitchen doorway with puzzled expressions on their faces.
"Lieutenant, what exactly did you find?"
"I don't like to make judgments without being in possession of all the facts, sir. The trail of bodies led us towards the farmer's market and slaughter district. Once we got there, it was hard to miss." "My gut reaction, sir?" There was a pause, and Roy could picture her looking over her shoulder and analyzing the scene, forcing herself to be objective. "It's some kind of nest, and it's not been empty long."